I didn't dare to move when I was left alone or one of the guards came, said Frodo, until the yelling and fighting began. The two big brutes, they quarreled, I think, over me and my things. I lay here terrified, and then all went deadly quiet, and that was worse. Yes, they quarreled, seemingly, said Sam. There must have been a couple of hundred of the dirty creatures in this place. A bit of a tall order for Sam Gangie, as you might say. But they've done all the killing of themselves. That's lucky, but it's too long to make a song about till we're out of here. Today on the Grey Company podcast, we discuss gameplay, specifically luck versus skill. Sometimes the cards go your way, and sometimes they don't. Can a bad player with a good deck succeed, or does it all depend on skill level? Hear our take on this episode.
Episode 35 of the Grey Company Podcast. Happy New Year. My name is Derek. Today's subject is luck versus skill. Ian and Matthew are with me today. And last time on the show, we began a new segment where we talk about how we see the current state of the game. Ian, we missed you last time, so I'll ask you first. How was the Lord of the Rings for you here at the start of 2016?
Pretty fantastic overall, I'd have to say. I think when you're kind of devoted to one game as we are, obviously we do a podcast about it. You kind of have your ups and downs, like sometimes when you get burnout, as we've talked about before. But I kind of feel like I'm in a period right now where I'm really enjoying the game and... you know, I was kind of dabbling in Game of Thrones LCG a bit and some other games, but I haven't really played those much lately just because the only thing I've wanted to play is Lord of the Rings, and that's a good sign, I think.
That's a great sign.
Yeah, the last two quests, Battle of Khar Doom and Dread Realm, I've just been kind of really focused on playing those and having a lot of fun with those too. Even though there's been a lot of kind of unsettled feelings about Battle of Khar Doom in particular, and discussing whether it's too hard and, you know, that whole issue.
I have a great saying I learned some years ago. If you give a man a sack of gold, he'll complain about how heavy it is.
Right.
So I feel like either they're too easy or they're too hard. You know, I try not to listen to that.
It's certainly a difficult balance. I mean, I beat it on the second try with no deck building, two player. So I maybe we got lucky, which is a great sort of thing to mention because it's sort of what our show is about. But I didn't find it that hard. Then I played the last quest this past weekend at the shop and got stomped twice. Mm-hmm. And but it was a fun one. Like, that was a fun one to lose. So, you know, I think to some degree the designers have to design to the future. Do any of us go back and play Shadows of Mirkwood anymore? Maybe some newer players, but more experienced players, no. And why? Because it's too easy. Mm. So 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, when we look back at this cycle, it'll probably be too easy because we'll have a significantly expanded card pool. And if the quests were all easy from the get-go, they're really going to be too easy 2-3 years down the line because the quests cannot adapt like an opponent can. Again, this is a great discussion for our episode or sort of segue into it, leadway. But I would much rather have harder quests now than our card pool can deal with than in a year never want to go back and play anything that's old because the player card pool has just outpaced older quests.
Yeah, maybe that's... I know Coder did it way back in the day, but maybe we need to do a power creep episode.
Yeah, I think difficulty in this game is one of the hardest things to judge. Like, and I know... kind of the official difficulty ratings have rightly gotten a lot of flack because there's been some weird ratings on, you know, like a low rating on a hard quest and a high rating on a easy quest, but it's just so hard to judge because sometimes it's really subjective, like what Matthew's talking about. Sometimes people will be like, this quest is so hard, and then I breeze through it, and then another quest everyone seems to have no trouble with, and I'm having problems with it.
Yep.
So a lot of it comes down to what kind of decks you want to play, and it also comes down to kind of what
skill.
What experience. Well, yeah, that will definitely pop up in our episode, but also kind of what you look for in the game. Like, because I see people talking about what they want from the game is to be able to take a deck and run it through a cycle, kind of campaign mode style, right? And so if that's what you want to do, then your experience of the difficulty, yeah, you're going to get to Battle of Karn Doom and be like, this is hard. And I think any way you slice it, it is a hard quest, but it's going to be especially hard. Whereas kind of what I look for in the game, in a way it is kind of a puzzle to me. I like building decks to take down specific quests, and so kind of how you perceive the difficulty is different based on that. And that's what I see a lot in kind of the discussions around
I agree with that. I think that's kind of been my experience lately. I haven't got to play very much. I feel like I'm starting to finally get up back on track since the baby was born. But I have a particular kind of deck I want to play. I got my Ent deck and I've got my Ranger deck, and I really want to just milk those decks and enjoy them and try and play them as much as possible. But they're not the correct piece for the puzzle for the kind of quests I've been doing. And so I don't have enough luck or skill to overcome the quests I've been playing with just these niche decks that, I don't know. And you guys know how it goes. You try them again and again to see if the luck pans out. You draw the cards you want to draw, or you make skillful choices. But yeah, that's kind of where I've been with the game, is having certain decks I want to play that don't necessarily match the quests I want to play. And that's pretty tough.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I will go back through all of the progression series videos now hosted on the 10th Nazgul YouTube channel, and I'll read the comments to see if any new comments have sprung up. And there was a comment recently that really irked me, and I don't know if it was a listener of our show or just someone who happened upon us on YouTube, but they gave Mitch and I crap for building decks for specific quests, and they told me that is not how the game is supposed to be played.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, oh really? Well, I like to win. My gaming time is limited, and that's exactly what card games are about. Card games are about beating your opponent at his own game. And then he said, you cannot compare this to a competitive game whatsoever. And again, a great segue for this particular episode. But yeah, Ian's absolutely right. There are players who want one deck, whether it's one deck to rule them all for every quest or just a cycle, or they don't have time to deck build, or they're not very good at deck building, and so they just want to take one deck and beat all the quests. And then there are people more like Ian, and perhaps myself, and certainly myself in the progression series days, where we built decks to beat quests, and we still didn't always win. But with that said, I find it sort of an interesting perspective that you shouldn't be building decks to beat a quest. Not the way I play. I think I just said, well, to each his own and happy gaming. I mean, that's just sort of where I left it, because we were clearly not going to agree because we had diametrically opposed views on how to approach this game.
And I mean, maybe that's where this is something we've mentioned before, and it'll continue to be on my wish list until one day it happens, which is if they wanted to, you know, create these little cycle packs, campaign packs, with little boons and burdens for each cycle, that could help those players, because you could give them boons.
Right.
And those boons could be tailored to the particular difficulties you face in that cycle, right? And then that way players could take those, you know, the one deck they want to take through it and maybe earn those boons that can help them along the way without having to deck build. So obviously it's not something that exists right now, but that would be an opportunity there. But I'd say as the game exists right now, I think the fact is just it is more a game where you build according to the scenario you face for the most part.
Yeah, I think the cycle campaigns is the best idea to come out of fandom that I've ever seen. And it's an idea that's been around for a little bit of time. It's not a brand new idea. And I think it's yet another way for FFG to make the old cycles competitive. Or not competitive, I'm sorry. Just relevant and fresh and go back to play. I guess the question then for FFG would be, is it worth our money, our design team's time and resources to make these print-on-demand things or official quests for old quests? Or is it a better use of time and profitability to continue just to put out new cycles and new adventure packs and deluxe and what have you. I don't know. I would love to see campaign mode for all of the cycles in the game. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's something we wouldn't need a ton of cards for. They just need to sort of find a way to make it work. But it really just is with boons and burdens. It's not like they have to link them much more than that. So it's just deciding what kinds of treasures would we have in the game or what have you to make it more fun. So I am all on board for that idea. when it comes to the state of the game for me, you know, I talked about it last week, last episode. There's not much to say except that, man, that newest spoiler article we got for that third adventure pack with the map. Whoa, was that super exciting. it's great that they keep coming up with fresh ways to approach the game. I think you and I were talking offline about this the day of the article released, and I think the only sad part is we wish every quest could now work that way instead of a one-hit wonder sort of thing.
Right, yeah. It's super exciting seeing that. I think it's kind of one of the most common topics that's come up on our podcast is locations and what are they good for and how they could be better and all that. Right. And yeah, this map seems like a great way to do it. And it's funny because this game is really a pioneer, but now I'm seeing a lot of kind of card adventure games out there. And one of the common things I see in most of them, whether you're talking about the Pathfinder card game or the Warhammer Quest card game or others that I've kind of dabbled with, is the locations are kind of separate from everything else that's going on, that you travel through locations, but they're not necessarily part of the encounter deck. And I just wonder if that's kind of based off of how this game does it. And a reaction to that or not.
Yeah, the other exciting thing was from the spoiled allies and events and attachments that we could see, they're also dealing with locations. There was the Rohan dude and some of these others, and they just seemed really exciting to me the way they work. I like the one that's kind of like Northern Tracker, where when he commits to the quest, you put a progress on a location in the staging area, and then I forget what happens. He gets extra willpower somehow.
I think so, yeah.
But it's just a really cool idea. And of course, nothing can ever be the power of Asphaloth or Northern Tracker. We've talked a lot about how these older cards that are superpower cards to this day really limited the design space of future cards, because you have two options. You make it way better than that, which then makes power creep even worse, especially in conjunction with Asphaloth. You could use both Asphaloth and some other super Asphaloth. Or the cards are sort of situationally powerful, but under only certain circumstances. And so it's a tough job for the designers to come up with new and interesting ways to deal with problems when there are power cards or staples like Asphaloth. Although, a random side note here, in my playgroup, no one uses Asphaloth anymore. That's not to say that, because I think no one really uses Glorfindel anymore. So we still beat quests plenty of time without the traditional location control. But I will say that locations are still an issue, even though we aren't using it.
True.
Yeah, I don't find myself using Asphaloth as much as I used to. I'm not quite sure why. I think it was a reaction to when they just started slapping like 5 or 6 quest points on everything. And then I was just
immune.
Yeah, or immune, or can't put progress on locations in the staging area. So at that point, I was like, and I think we just have so many willpower possibilities now, at least in solo and two player, that you can kind of just, blast through questing, hopefully, and not have to worry about it as much. But 3 or 4 player, you still need a lot of that location management stuff.
Well, as we said at the top, the subject for today is luck versus skill. And as Matthew said, this can come into play a lot with competitive card games, but it definitely applies to our cooperative card game as well. So let's kick off the discussion by what we actually mean when we say luck versus skill.
I mean, to me, luck would be drawing the right cards at the right time from your deck, but luck, or drawing that card that's going to save your butt at the moment you need it. Or on the flip side, having the encounter deck just throw you softballs staging after staging. I think it works in both ways.
Yeah, and a good example that, you guys mentioned this earlier, the Shadow of Mirkwood cycle, the decks were so big. So, especially, I'm thinking particularly of Dead Marshes, it was so big that the decks were inconsistent. And so there were less, I don't know if there's statistically fewer chances of getting a shadow card. But that maybe 1 or 2 copy card that you really didn't want to see, you had a pretty good chance of not seeing it because the decks were so big and inconsistent. So there was maybe arguably a larger slice of luck. And now in the last cycle or two, since the developers have owned their game, I don't want to say there's less luck, but the encounter decks are way more consistent and that does have a bearing on the luck in that regard.
Yeah, I think what you're saying about consistency is kind of the key of what people mean by luck in this card game, and maybe even other card games. It's like, I guess you're considered in getting that you're getting lucky if you get some outcomes that aren't necessarily going to happen on a consistent basis,
right?
And I guess it's more skill if somehow you're arranging your decks in ways that you're getting, you know, the favorable outcomes consistently.
Or constructing your deck in such a way that there are more favorable outcomes based on the cards that you have and the ability to make choices with the cards you have, whether it's a lucky draw or not.
Right.
Right. And that's where it gets tricky, too, with any card game. I think with The Lord of the Rings especially is... I have a two-pronged comment here. The first is that because of the nature of the game and the theme, people really want to build the decks they want to build. I mentioned my Ranger deck, and mm-hmm. so it may have some cards that combo well together, but because I'm focusing on theme and the trait, or the faction, as Dan likes to say, hasn't really been fleshed out to be completely self-contained or self... I don't know what I'm trying to say. So then, because I've built my deck that way, there's less a chance of me getting the cards I need. But when I do draw the cards that I need or draw the cards that I have, if I'm able to use them in a skillful way to combat the problems of the encounter deck, that's where skill comes in. So like I could hang on to a card thinking I might need it for a later purpose when an encounter card comes up, or I could play it. Like, you know, the easiest example is the Sneak Attack Gandalf. I could hold on to that thinking I might need it later. I could go ahead and play it now to take care of an immediate problem. Those kind of decisions and how they pan out, I think, have a lot to do with skill. But on the other hand, they do have to do with luck, because if I go ahead and I burn that Sneak Attack Gandalf to take care of that enemy that's been bugging me for a couple rounds, is it skillful when I don't draw another enemy that would have been beneficial to have that Gandalf for? Or is it just luck?
Right. There was... And I didn't pay much attention to it, admittedly, but a while back, someone on the forums, or I feel like I remember seeing it on BGG, did a contest where the encounter deck was stacked, and it was people playing through a quest, and the person wanted to see how different people would react to the same encounter cards in the same order. And the only comment I remember from that experiment was that the originator was surprised at how people played so differently because he expected everyone to play the same cards because there's obvious plays in his estimation. And it ended up not working that way. But I would say that skill is making those sorts of decisions. And I firmly stand by my position that people who aren't good at this game aren't good because they build theme decks. Meaning, 100% everything's consistent. If it doesn't have an elf on the card, it doesn't go on my elf deck, whether it's an event, attachment, or character. And so I think every card game, whether it's competitive or whether it's cooperative, has an element of luck. I think probably every board game, or most every board game, you know, game period, has an element of luck. But... maybe something like chess is probably entirely skill because nothing ever changes in that one. Everything's always set. The pieces always move the way they do. So you have full knowledge, I guess. But in games where you don't have full knowledge, you don't know what your opponent's going to do, whether it's a human or whether it's, you know, a sort of artificial intelligence like the encounter deck, there's a degree of luck. But I think a skillful player will recognize that and build their deck in such a way to be able to react to certain things. And so if you were only running an Ent deck, which tends to be slow, and you were playing against a fast-paced encounter deck, your deck cannot counter it. And that comes down to a choice you're choosing to make, which is to run a slower deck, and you will probably lose. And it's not because the game's too hard. It's because you did not build a deck that can adapt to an opponent. And that's basically my position. And unfortunately, traits decks are not in the position where they will always win. And I would go out on a limb, perhaps, and say they shouldn't. Dan was bemoaning the fact last episode that Gondor is not in a place to win unless it's partnered with another deck. Now, thematically speaking, we can maybe argue that Gondor should be consistent because it held its own against Mordor for decades when everyone else was frolicking around Middle Earth. But thematic concessions aside, I don't think every trait should work on its own, because then what the heck's the difference? If they can all quest right. well, if they can all attack well, if they can all manage threat well, if they can all defend well, then there's no difference. So, I mean, granted, they can do it in different ways, the elves bouncing in and out, and that can have some faint-like effects or threat-reducing effects or healing effects. But at the end of the day, it's going to be very limiting for the designers if every trait has to do everything equally well. I don't want it to happen. And yeah, that probably sucks for solo players, quite frankly, if their favorite faction isn't solo viable. But it's also a game that supports 2, 3, and 4 players, and the designers have to design to that as well. And I don't want every faction to be able to do everything at all times, because I think the game becomes stale and boring, and it's not that exciting to try new and different things.
Well, in that way, it's kind of similar to a competitive game in that whatever, you know, say I'm playing Game of Thrones and I love playing my Night's Watch deck, there are going to be certain other decks I play that are, because of the way they're constructed, the way they play, that counter mine, and there's very little I can do about that, whereas other decks I come up against, it's going to have a favorable matchup. In a way, it's kind of similar in this game. Like, whatever trait you play, there may be quests that... it's suited for you to do well, and other times it's going to be designed to totally counter what you're doing. Like a quest that hates on allies, obviously you're not going to have a good time if you're playing dwarves, because that's how they play. But that's right. In a way, that's not too different from how competitive games work. So I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing that, you know, every trait deck can't succeed against every quest.
I think
there is a perception that... And I don't know if I'm right about this, but I feel like from what I've heard people say over the years, both people who play this game and who don't play this game, I think there's a perception that there's more luck involved in this game and LOTR versus competitive card games. And I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't made up my mind, but I think the reason why is because we're facing off against a randomized encounter deck. And so many would say that's pure luck right there. Versus in a competitive card game, you're going to be facing off another player who has their own skill. And so it's kind of a matchup of skill versus skill, whereas an encounter deck doesn't have skill, right? It's not thinking. It's just completely random. But you do have to consider that it is being constructed by someone. The designers are constructing it to defeat the decks that are out there. So... yeah, I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Is there more luck in this game than in competitive card games?
A little bit, and I think primarily I would say it's apples and oranges, because you are playing against an opponent in the same way you would in a competitive game. The difference is that you are playing against the same opponent over and over again, and you know exactly what's in his deck.
Right.
True. And so, you know, I consider each quest to be kind of like its own opponent. And so if Ian, you and I are playing Aegot or, Conquest or something, and you keep playing the same, or you just like with Gen Con, 2014, we all got the Conquest core sets. We played the same decks over and over again, and we know what's in each other's deck. Right. So that helps us to predict what's going to happen. You know, I'd say, yes, there is a little bit more luck involved with Lord of the Rings or a cooperative game. But I don't think it's as stark as people want it to be. And I think above everything else, it's apples and oranges.
Well, I agree, but perhaps more strongly, or say that there is more luck than you're willing to admit. And that's because, I mean, how many games have we said, okay, last final quest push, please, 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 please don't give me that one card that's going to wreck me. And that is entirely based on luck, because if the encounter deck could react, they would always give us that treachery that's going to wipe our board space. Whereas, if it's in their hand, of course.
Yes.
But the thing is, a good player could plan for that. I know that this we're both down to one life in Magic. I need to hold on to this card in case something goes wrong, or I need to make sure I'm milling my deck to make sure I get that, if they were a skilled deck builder and had various answers to various things. But there are plenty of times we get softballs from the encounter deck, and I think that's more likely to happen in a game like this than a game where you had a skilled deck builder going up against you. Now, I'm not saying it's 99% or 90 or 75 or percent luck based. I'm not arguing that. But to me, indisputable that this game is more based on luck than others, because the encounter deck simply can never react to what we're doing. The designers just simply have to sort of say, here are the common strategies, I'll throw in one treachery for each, and hopefully they come up at the right time.
Yeah, that's fair. I was making weird noises because it's exactly the luck element is, did the guy draw the card? So, like, if I, you know, like you said, we're playing Magic, I've got my big beast out, and I'm thinking, oh man, I really hope he can't, you know, just remove that card or put another big animal or creature down to block it, which is the luck element. Did you draw it or did you not? Now, I guess the skill part is, do you play it? Did I play that card that's going to save my tail earlier on, which you mentioned before? But so we'll, yeah, a little bit more lucky in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think just because of that factor, there is probably more luck than competitive games. At the same time, I think skill, I guess my position for this episode would probably be that there's more skill involved in this game than it's generally given credit for.
I completely agree.
And that's kind of a separate issue versus comparing it to cooperative games. And the dabbling I've done in kind of other LCGs has exposed me to concepts that aren't really discussed in this game. And I think why that's interesting is just that because in those games, skill is obviously an accepted thing that people really take it seriously and discuss, you know, here's how I'm going to get better. These are the things that are weak in my game, etc. And players in this game don't generally do that. And obviously, it's not like it's necessary. It's not like this is a job and it's not like there's tournaments to win and all that. But again, I just think it's interesting to note that and to think that, well, if you do want to get better at this game, there are things you can think about doing. And maybe that's kind of what this episode is somewhat about. And I think there are kind of three big skill categories in this game. I think there's lots of different skills, but kind of the areas they fall into, and you guys can tell me if I'm off or forgetting something, but deck building, obviously building your deck, piloting your deck, so the decisions you make throughout the course of the game, like Derek, you're mentioning what you play, and then the third I would say is kind of encounter deck knowledge, like how much do you know about the scenario, how much do you kind of understand about how that particular scenario works and how scenarios in general work, and that will kind of inform both your deck building and your decisions throughout the course of a game. And I guess this is kind of based off a tweet that someone sent, because I did, you know, kind of ask for people's feedback through Twitter, but I guess a fourth area that I just thought of would be just knowing and understanding the rules, because
there is
a lot of kind of arcaneness to the rules and complex stuff, and sometimes if you don't fully understand it, obviously that is a skill, I think, to be able to understand all this stuff. So
I read on BGG today that someone totally was whiffing the unique rule, meaning whenever there was like a Gandalf on the table, they thought you could play another Gandalf and it just removed the original one, so you could play him three times in a round to get his effects three times. Yeah, not how it works. But the other thing I would add is that, and it's actually kind of related to that, but it's also related to the encounter deck knowledge, is when you're playing a competitive game, if you have a nice, friendly opponent, you can often ask them for advice. What did I do that wasn't very good? So, for example, I suck at Star Realms. Well, I shouldn't say suck. I just always lose to Hidalgo. Almost always. Not always. Although, interestingly, when we play in person with the actual cards, I almost always win.
You're the
when
reason I don't play Star Realms anymore.
He always wins, so I think he's cheating. But with that said, I would ask, I can ask my opponent, you see what I'm playing, what or what I'm buying, what am I doing incorrectly? Look at my deck. Tell me what's wrong. In this game, since a lot of people play solo, they either never get caught on the rules that they're not actually playing correctly, or they can't get advice in the heat of the moment.
That's a good point.
Like, oh, on this turn, when you had this treachery come up, you had this that could have canceled it and you missed it. Or you didn't have this in your deck, so you should have played this then and not at this point. So you can't get instant feedback. All you can do is go on a forum after the fact, when you may or may not remember the 10 plays beforehand that got you to the point where you are, and said, well, this is what came up. What could I have done? Because then all the advice is hypothetical. We don't really know the other types of decisions you tend to make. maybe you get a high-cost ally in your opening hand, and so your first three turns you spend saving up for Gildor, when you actually could have had an army of three or four people beforehand, but we didn't know that because we don't know every step of the game. So I think those two components, rules and not being able to get feedback live in real time, or at least immediately post the match, from a living, breathing person, are two things that, can affect skill. It's harder to get better at this game, I think, than some other games.
Yeah, because if you're living in a vacuum, you're not going to get better.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point that I didn't even think about. Yeah, in competitive games. And the big competitive players in games, they will form groups and play together for that very purpose, in order to give each other feedback and test their decks and all that. And obviously that doesn't really happen in this game. If you have a regular play group, maybe you'll discuss that stuff, or maybe you'll spend your time just complaining about the quest afterwards. but yeah, it's not necessarily something that happens, and you will see people posting and saying, "What am I doing wrong?" And it's almost impossible to answer them. You know, it's like, well, either you type up your entire game report, or, which is probably not going to happen, or I can just give you kind of general tips, but. Yeah,
I mean, someone said they lost Passage Through Mirkwood 40 times, but they were sure they had all the rules right. That's just not possible. Not possible. You're doing something wrong if you lose that quest, unless you're playing the tactics core set deck. And you're doing something wrong.
Definitely. And while we're talking about getting better, I'm going to refer to Hearthstone a few times throughout this episode, because that's really become the only other card game I play, just because of where I am in life. It's easier just to hop on my phone and play a quick game. But with a community like Hearthstone, where it's almost entirely, let's say PvP, you know, you're playing against other players, there's a huge community around getting better. And so there's guys that play Hearthstone professionally. They Twitch and they get YouTube hits. And so those are the guys that are like the top players in the world, and they will show you how they do it and what they do right. Now, there are no top players in the world for the Lord of the Rings, but I think...
Excuse me, progression series, come on.
Can I make my damn point? Let me finish.
No.
So you have things like the progression series for this game and Mirkwood Runner and Us and Coder that are a resource to you. But
I take offense that we're not professionals.
Okay. These guys are literally professionals. Their job is to play Hearthstone. If only we're in the wrong game, gentlemen. So that's to say that for us, there you can watch these other people that produce stuff on YouTube and get some tips and glean some information that way. Which is a little bit more effective than posting your nondescript, you know, after action report on the forum and begging for feedback.
Right, because the thing is, I mean, like with anything, we're all involved in the education field one way or another. And so one of the key things that you take away from that field is that feedback, how important it is, right? Like, if it doesn't matter how many times you do a certain action, whether like working on a math problem or playing a scenario, if you do it 40 times without really reflecting on what you're doing wrong or getting feedback, you're not necessarily going to get better just by repetition. Even if you don't have someone to play with, like you said, Derek, you can watch videos. I think that's the number one way, because another thing I would say about this game is deck building is super important, but sometimes I think it gets too high a priority, where people undervalue the decisions that are made during a game. And so if you just read someone's deck, let's say you're a new player, or maybe even you've been playing for a while but you're not doing well, and you just take someone's deck off the internet, you may still lose and be like, what is this person talking about? Their deck sucks, you know? But it's because, A, you don't know the strategy of that deck, right? Because you didn't build it necessarily. And there's also those little decisions that have to be made. And yeah, watching people play, you can see those decisions being made. That helps. And the other big thing is just kind of reflecting on it. Again, you know, it's not that it's a job, but if you are wanting to get better, you have to take the time to kind of analyze why am I losing, instead of you just keep again and again trotting out the same deck or type of decks or same strategy and losing.
I was gonna say, I tell my students all the time, and I love cliches, and I'm like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. If you're playing Passage Through Mirkwood 40 times and losing, that is the definition of insanity. It is not the game that's too hard at that point. There's something wrong with your approach. Either it's the rules or your decisions you're making. And so Self-reflection is key to improving at any skill in life. You got to start small and work your way up.
Definitely. And also want to reemphasize trying other games. You know, if we're, we're going down the education path, seeing things from a different style, like if you have a different learning style, seeing things from a different angle will allow you to take what you've learned and apply it. So try a different card game, try a board game, help try a video game, read a book, you know, read Sun Tzu's The Art of War and apply it to this game. But also, you know, it is worth, really worth reflecting on. And it's, I don't do that. So, and I do a podcast about this game and it's really gated my ability to make the right calls with this game and with other games, because my thought is, well, if I've got an hour, I want to play a game. I don't want to read about a game. I don't want to watch somebody else play a game. I want to play the game.
Yeah.
Pregnant pause. But but if you don't take that time to just at least think about the game, look through the encounter deck, you know, read the encounter cards, look through your own deck, look at Dan's blog, look at Ian's blog. They have blogs, Matthew. then, you know, this it's going to be a lot harder for you to get better. So utilize those resources. Take the time to think about it if you really want to get better. If you just want to have your hands on the cards and play, then just do what I do and just play blind.
I totally agree. I speak all the time on the show about how my playing of Star Trek CCG or Magic or Middle-earth CCG really informs how I play this particular game. And so I've mentioned on previous episodes that I have this big How to Become a Better Player article percolating in my head. And actually, one of the paragraphs or sections of this article that I have yet to write, and I've probably been talking about it for a year, is kind of the metagame. And that for every single, or not every single, but for many, many games, you actually spend way more time outside of game time. You're building your deck. You're tweaking your deck. You're reading articles. You're watching videos. You're trying to find new combos. With any game of this nature, I think you probably actually spend way less time playing the actual game than designing and thinking about. And I think that buys you into it. And I think it makes you a better player. If you just built this perfect deck from scratch and really thought about it and did a lot of talking with your friends and buddies or online people, then it's more exciting when that deck wins. If you just net deck and don't pull a deck from the internet and don't understand how it works, it's not going to be as satisfying. So I totally get the draw of, I don't have a lot of time to play this game, so I just want to play. But then again, that's the definition of insanity. It's doing the same thing over and over and over again, and you keep losing and you put the game on the shelf because it's too hard and you never play again. I rarely play the game. I spend much more time thinking about it, talking with Ian about it on Facebook, recording the podcast. Probably a 10-to-1 ratio of the amount of time I think and talk about the game versus actually playing it. But my play time is much more valuable and satisfying because the decks that I and my buddies are bringing to the table are good.
That's good.
And we win more often than not. Now, do I think the game's hard, to be completely fair? Yes. Do I think some of the current cycle quests are harder than previous cycles? Yes. But we're not getting stomped, and it doesn't take us 40 times to beat a quest. Because we're reflecting and we're really trying to build better decks.
Preach. All right, I want to go back. Let's talk more about piloting, because I think that's what we mean when we're discussing skill. Let's talk about piloting a deck. And for me, the number one decision you have to make, and that would separate a skilled player from a less skilled player, a newbie, is when do you, let's call it the action economy. When do you use your character's action? Now, as the game has gone on, characters have lots of different functions. You don't just exhaust them to quest, attack, or defend. But that's really, to me, that's the number one thing is, when am I going to exhaust my character? And those decisions become easier depending on the character in question. So if it's Baragond, you're not going to send him questing. But if it's a more well-rounded character, you have a hard decision to make. Do I send him questing now because I really need to knock out that location? Or do I hang him back in case I need to attack or defend? That's a very core question, and it's a very good early game question anytime you're playing the game, whether you're a skilled player or not. So for you two, what helps you to make that decision in the early game or maybe at an unlucky part of the quest when you need to send somebody to use a character or to save them for later?
For me, that is a decision that I think about on certain turns. But I've talked a lot about in our previous deck building episodes, my approach to building decks and my personal approach. And you can make different decks, but almost every single deck I build is 25 allies. So 50% allies. And then relatively evenly split between attachment and events, just depending on what I'm running. Because, and I've also talked about what in Magic is called the mana curve, or in this case, the cost curve. I need a certain number of zero or one cost allies, you know, two cost allies, three cost allies, and four plus. Because every turn, I'm dropping an ally. And I also have a certain number of chump blockers, or a certain number of people who are always questing or always doing this. And so I don't have to make that decision very often of, oh my gosh, do I send you it or hold you back? It's, nope, I've got a chump that can take care of any defense if I have to. So yes, you're going to the quest. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Now, certainly there are times where I didn't get key attachments that would help ready people or something where I have to make a more informed decision. But because I don't play solo, a lot of that decision making is dependent on how much willpower are my buddies sending. Yep. If they are able to send more than me, then I'm holding back more. Does the character have Sentinel? Well, then maybe I do need to hold him back more because he's sending more to the quest and I want to make sure I can cover defense either for myself or for my friend. So, I mean, I'm not really giving an answer here, but I tend to play all things being equal more conservatively. So I would rather not clear the location or maybe raise my threat by one and not get an undefended attack that wipes out a hero than to send the person to the quest and have a couple extra points of progress that we ended up not actually needing.
Yeah, I would say I'm coming at it obviously from a more solo perspective. So in a way, kind of the whole thing is in my hands versus right. Thinking about what the other players are doing. So kind of what I'm thinking about is that those decisions you're talking about, Derek, are kind of informed by two major things. The first thing I would say is kind of the encounter deck knowledge piece I talked about. Mm-hmm. I do play the first time a scenario blind just because it's fun. Usually you end up with some nasty surprises and that can be entertaining. But very quickly after getting stomped or whatever may happen in the first game or two, then I start thinking about it. And then the other piece besides the encounter deck knowledge, you know, what you're facing in that scenario is kind of just the plan. And in a lot of card games, it's divided up.
Wait a minute, you have a
plan? Yeah, who would have thought it, huh? A lot of card games players think about an early, mid, late game. It's something Dan I know has written about on his blog, and it's something that absolutely applies to this game too. And the early game especially has traditionally been important in this game. A little bit less so now that encounter decks are being designed so that they will keep taxing you and hurting you throughout a game instead of, it used to be you could just, as soon as you got, if you got going in the first couple of rounds, that was pretty much right?
You're going to win.
Not so much now, but still the early game, I would say, is probably still the most critical piece. And so whatever deck you're using, you need to have a plan for the early game, and you need to have a plan, especially for the first round. You need to know if an enemy pops up, how am I going to deal with it? That's probably the most essential piece because you don't want to lose a hero to an undefended attack like Matthew mentions. You want to have a plan for, based on what you know about the encounter deck, how much threat are you facing off the gate? Like in Battle of Karn Doom, you're facing, if I remember right, 5 threat out of the gate to start off solo play. Or you may be facing 0 threat, so that's going to determine that. And there's also kind of a difference in play style, like Matthew mentioned, conservative versus you might be a more risk-taking player. So some players, they really just, you know, they'll hold back. They'll take that threat hit from not questing successfully because it allows them to kind of solidify their board position, meaning they're not going to lose characters. They're going to focus more on combat the first turn so they can get established. So those are all of the kind of the things you think about, but yeah, if you're trying to work on skill, you should have a plan for the first few turns of the game. What cards are you looking for? What are you going to prioritize? What are you going to play first? What's your strategy? Are you trying to rush through the quest, or are you trying to take your time?
So what do you do if your luck doesn't hold out and the encounter deck wrecks your plan? What do you do then?
I guess it depends on how severe the wrecking is. Right. You know, I'm having flashbacks to Miley Cyrus singing Wrecking Ball in the back of my head here. But
Frodo on the Wrecking Ball.
You know, certainly there are times where you just scoop. And I'll admit that while I tend to be a conservative player sometimes, there are times when I'm the first to be like, I'm out, I'm done, let's stop. And my buddy's like, no, let's play the turnout, let's see what happens, I think we got this. I'm like, no, there's no way. So I guess it kind of just depends, you know. But I think there are times when you just scoop because the encounter deck just wrecks you. And yeah. I think there's times where you can recover from a bad draw. But you're not going to really know until you've had enough experience playing the game what you really can and cannot come back from. So again, another non-answer from me, I'm saying it depends. But there certainly are times when we just say, let's restart because this ain't going to work.
Yeah, totally. I mean, scooping is a thing in this game for sure. I can't tell you how many games against Karn Doom, for example, I scoop because it's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. You know, there's just too much threat to start off with that there's no way I can catch up. You know, there's too many enemies popping out for me to deal with. There's no point. Gaming time is limited, so you are going to scoop. But again, I would argue that's not necessarily that different from a competitive game. Like, you know, I've played on Octagon, AGOT, and people will scoop, say, oh, you win because, you know, it may be turn two, but you got all your big characters out and I have nothing, so there's no point, right? I can't come back. So it's just something that's part of a card game, and it is definitely part of this game. Now, for those in-between situations, you may not get the luck you want. You may not get the cards you want to draw. You may not get the encounter deck draws that you want. And that's why I think it's important. One thing I always try to do and I try to stress is kind of backup plans. Meaning, okay, this deck is designed. My strategy is I'm going to get a chump blocker out turn one. Because I don't have a strong defender. Let's say I have Prince Imrahil, and my strategy is I need to sacrifice someone so he can ready. What if I don't draw an ally turn one, right?
Right.
So kind of when you're building your deck, then you have to think about, if worst case scenario, I don't draw a deck, don't draw an ally, sorry. What else can I include in the deck in terms of attachments or events that will kind of give me a plan B or a plan C? That's something you can do. It's not always going to help. Like I said, you are going to, sometimes the cards just don't fall, but you kind of need to think about backup plans in that case.
I mean, a good example of that is playing around certain cards. Like, we all love blocking wargs very much. and that's a tricky call because you don't want to base every action around the possibility of getting this card. You want to be able to cancel it, but at the same time, if you feel like that, you know that that card's coming and it's terrible. So you commit only what you need to the quest. You commit who you know can survive to the quest until you draw that cancellation. You know, little things like that that you know, allow you to play around a card, a nasty card that you know is coming off the encounter deck.
You know, you had asked Ian and I how we make the decision whether to commit to the quest or hold back for defending or attacking. What I think is the more skillful decision, however, is what you just mentioned in a way, which is, do I cancel this treachery or do I save her for something potentially nastier? And when you're playing a if you play quest blind the first time and you don't know, then it's a total crapshoot. But as, again, you begin to gain knowledge on your opponent, i.e. the encounter deck, then you really have to decide, is it better that all my characters take 3 damage, or do I cancel that one treachery that I know is way worse coming down the line, you know, so to speak. Right. So that, to me, is the number one skillful, critical decision that gets made in every single game, if you have the cancellation cards in your hand, of course. But do we cancel this now or not? I was playing with my buddy Steve 2 weekends ago, and that repeatedly came up. I've got Test of Will in my hand, or I've got 2 of them. This one's bad, but is it bad enough? Mm-hmm. Or do I need to save this for something else?
And that
I think, is one mark of a good player versus someone who just wants to cancel every treachery, you know, at first sight.
And that really depends. Again, it goes to skill, and that depends on your board state. You know, how well can I adapt to this hit? And being able to gauge that is another element of skill.
Right. And more skillful decks can adapt more easily to different things.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that kind of gets lost in the luck versus skill discussion sometimes is part of the skill is managing the luck, managing the risk. Like we said earlier, every game of this type involves luck, but the skill really comes down to knowing what the risks are and deciding when you take the risk, when you don't. Like, mm-hmm. if I know this quest has a ton of shadow effects that boost attack, and I decide to defend with my hero who's only one damage away from dying, that's probably not a very skillful decision unless I'm truly desperate. That's really depending on luck. But if there's maybe, I know there's maybe only a few in the encounter deck, that might be a risk I take, and it might come to bite me, and that might be, you might call that bad luck, but you might also call that, you know, just making an informed decision based on the risks you know are there, and you might get away with it, you might not. But I think there's a difference between kind of making that decision with eyes open or mm-hmm. taking an undefended attack or whatever it may be versus just kind of winging it, I guess.
Yeah, it reminds me of poker, because with poker you're constantly playing the odds. Like, do I
right.
keep this hand? Do I, you know, do I go all in because I feel like the odds are in my favor? It doesn't mean you're going to count cards in the Lord of the Rings, but you know, you know there's going to be one or two or three cards in that encounter deck that are just going to wreck you. And you know if you're playing a quest that has really nasty shadow cards, shadow effects. So being aware of those things allow you to make the correct, or, you know, I'm not going to say correct, but the most correct decision you can make. And sometimes, you know, luck is just not on your side, and you know that you've gone through most of the nasty shadow effects, but then you take that undefended and the last nasty shadow effect in the deck pops up and bye-bye Aragorn.
Yeah, sometimes I do count cards. Yeah. In the most recent cycle, or the current cycle, Cursed Dead, I think it is, where there's five of them,
right.
it pops up, it brings back all the discard ones. Oh yeah, I'm keeping track of those bad boys.
The Cursed Dead are actually a good example of that topic, though, because that's another decision of, like, do I keep them around, which means I'm going to eat these shadow effects each turn, or do I kill them and they might all pop back out with their when revealed effect. So just all those little decisions.
Let's talk for a minute about skill in a cooperative setting. We talked about it a little bit in how that can inform your response to the encounter deck or the decisions you make in the cards you play. But is it possible to determine how skilled a player is in a cooperative game?
You know, the other day on BGG, I saw someone asking, how do I figure out what other people's scores are in this game? And my God, I rolled my eyes so hard they almost fell out of my head, because I'm like, really, who cares about score or pays attention? But I think that brings up perhaps an interesting discussion point of, can we actually measure skill, and does it matter? When it comes to your score on a quest, I could care less. A win is a win. Mm-hmm. Right, you know, as my favorite character from Next Generation often says, right, if winning is not important, Commander, then why keep score? Well, because score in this game is stupid. But with that said, I think you can manage skill. There are certain people that I play with locally that are not as skilled as deck building as they could possibly be. And I'm trying to say this in the least offensive way in case they're listening, but they often drag down the team. They either don't make a deck that's very cohesive, or they end up with a hand of 20 cards and say, nope, I've got nothing to play this turn. And I'm like, really? 20 cards and nothing to play with 50 resources sitting on your heroes because you've not played anything else for the past three turns. So, yes, I think you can measure if some folks are better deck builders or better players than others, because if you got a buddy with 20 resources, 20 cards, and nothing on the table, that's probably not the best player of this game. But in situations that aren't so stark, can you tell? Does it matter? I mean, I wish we had crystal ball so we could see, well, if I had done this differently three turns ago, what would that have looked like? And then we could really learn from our experiences. But we don't have crystal ball, so we don't exactly know. I know that there are certain people I would rather play with when we have a big event at my game store, so fellowship events. There are players I want to play with because they're good deck builders and they make great decisions and we win more often than not. And there's other players who I like a lot personally. They're great, but I don't want to play with because I know we're going to lose because they're not mm-hmm. going to carry their weight. So I guess the answer is yes, you can tell difference in skill. Does it matter at the end of the day if you just want to, you know, if you want to win? I guess it does.
What also speaks to the value of having a really good group to play this game with and how much you can enjoy the game if you are in a group, you know, even if it's just one other person who not only plays a game with you, but is actually interested in learning how to get better and keeps up with the meta and that kind of thing. So that's, so it's good to have another skilled player to enjoy the game with. It just enhances the experience that much more.
Right.
I think probably the purest test of skill would probably be what Matthew, you mentioned in that BGG kind of experiment that happened a while back where the encounter deck was stacked in a certain order and the player deck was stacked in a certain order as well, if I remember correctly. So at that point, all the kind of luck factor is taken out and it's just a matter of what decisions are you making. So I guess if you were going to design an actual skill test for this game, it would look kind of like that. And even then, it wouldn't be perfect because maybe you made the wrong decision, but it could actually be justified that it was actually a good decision, but it's just, you know, whatever order it happened to be stacked in didn't necessarily reward that decision or whatnot. But there's definitely a difference, like I said earlier, that skill is not acknowledged as much as a part of this game compared to competitive games. I think there's absolutely a difference between players of different skill levels, but it's really hard to determine because for a lot of reasons, because there are no tournaments, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because a lot of players are playing by themselves, so there's no one to see what they're doing or compare themselves against. And sometimes the encounter deck is just, you know, if you think about the kind of Race Against the Shadow format they have that they came up with a while ago, I mean, you may have a very skilled player, but they just get absolutely wrecked by the encounter deck.
Mm-hmm,
right. And you may just look at that and be like, yeah, that player sucks. But it's not. They just got wrecked. And so that's kind of where the measurement gets hard. It really comes down to, I guess, consistency more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, is a player consistently having success with their deck and against different scenarios, I guess, would be the only way you could really measure that.
One way we maybe could a bit more, and I remembered an earlier comment that I was going to make that I forgot, is the encounter deck can so often whiff because it cannot react to the specific board state on the game. And I've said forever that I wish we had more player cards that had the risk-reward theme. Mostly speaking about corruption, but because that's such a huge presence in the books, but such a minor part of the game. But a very good tale comes to mind. I was playing with my buddy Steve a couple weekends ago. We're playing the hardest quest, the last one of the cycle, getting stomped. He does a very good tale to try to save us, and it whiffs. And we were like, oh, you know, but we need more cards like that.
Yeah.
Because when you play cards that like Galadriel and the Mirror and these things that have drawbacks, most player cards don't have drawbacks, and I wish they did. Because those, to skillful players, if I could lump myself as a semi-skillful player, are the most interesting to play. The ones that have a little bit of randomness and could go bad. Because the encounter deck can't go bad. Or I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. They can often go bad, even if it's not their own choice. But if players are including increasingly amounts of cards that could whiff or not go off, then that in a way is helping counterbalance what the encounter deck does, which is whiffing so often. So we need more player cards that could potentially whiff.
True.
You know, and it's more interesting than let's just plop this dude down. There was a dwarf that was spoiled recently, an upcoming unique dwarf. You plop him down, he's got 3 attack, you pay another resource, and he puts 2 damage on something. Well, I mean, that's fun, and that's cool, and that's powerful, but I want to risk. You know, because in a battle it'd be risky. You know, sure. Have him. I don't even know what we would do in that situation. But I love the cards that the player might not get ahead, but if they do, it's pretty cool and awesome when it happens. The ranger thing is kind of a neat one. Where I've never used it yet, but I actually kind of want to. Where you put the ranger dude in the encounter deck, the ranger summons. What a cool card! It's kind of risky. But man, you know, if you pull that out and it really works, you're like the hero at the table. That's really skillful. It's really awesome. But it also has a little bit of luck there. So I think it kind of melds the two in interesting ways.
True. Well, before we wrap this one up, let's close with a little self-assessment, a little honest look at ourselves as players. Matthew, you said you are a semi-skilled player. I think you're being modest. But what areas of the game do you think you are strong at, and what do you think you need to work on?
I'm good at everything. I need to work on nothing.
Done. On to you, Ian. You know,
that's actually
when
hard.
When I put this question in the show notes, I predicted that as Matthew's answer.
No, absolutely not true. I think where I'm strong at is I know the type of decks that I like to play, and I know the types of decks that I can use successfully. Where perhaps I could work on it, and it's not so much a weakness in my play style necessarily, it's just I play very straightforward, simple sort of aggro decks. And while I will at times be conservative, I play the let me get 50 dudes on the table and overwhelm either the threat in the staging area or the enemies on the table with no finesse, really. Where I could probably have a more varied or skillful or interesting time with this game is if I tried to build different decks. But that's where, again, it's, I don't know if so much a skill thing, but I don't really go outside of my comfort zone when it comes to deck building. If they're sort of, if they're like lore, I do build lore decks, but when I build lore, it's the straightforward power lore cards like the Ents.
Yeah.
There's no finesse to the Ents, but there is finesse to Aristor. So he's someone I don't want to use, but Treebeard would be someone I want to use because Treebeard's very straightforward and very aggro. So I don't know. I think I could venture outside of my comfort zone and try different things more often.
Yeah.
I think that could make me a more well-rounded player or appreciate other playstyles more. But when it comes to my deck building, it's the same approach I bring to every single game. When I play Game of Thrones, I play the exact same kind of decks. When I play Magic, I play the exact same sort of theoretical framework for my decks. And so that's why I think I'm skillful. It's because I've learned these things from other games, and they translate to Lord of the Rings.
You found your niche.
Yeah, right, right.
Ian, what do you think? How honest are you feeling today?
I'm always honest.
I'll vouch for that.
Well, first off, I would say throughout this discussion, I do want to emphasize that the reason we're bringing up this topic is because, at least the reason I wanted to bring it up is because I feel like it's something that's not discussed, and that skill is sometimes not taken enough into account in this game. And that it would be interesting to have more of those kind of discussions within this game than happen. But it's not to say that, you know, if you're having fun with this game and you don't really care about these issues, then just keep having fun with it. It doesn't matter, right? And if you're a new player, don't feel bad about not being skilled, because that's just kind of how it goes whenever you come into any game. But kind of this discussion today is centered around the idea, if you do want to get better, there are some things you can think about. So with that disclaimer out of the way, I'll answer the question by saying, I think what I'm strong at, or that I try to focus on, is kind of that thinking about particular encounter decks and thinking about how I can counter them. And I really try to focus on the reflection piece, that if I lose, I try to think about why that's happening and attempting lots of different solutions to try to see what works, and just kind of being analytical in that way, because it's fun for me. That may not sound fun for everyone, but it's something that I enjoy. I like that aspect of that's one reason why I really like Karn Doom, because in a way it was kind of the equivalent of maybe facing like a super skilled like champion player in another game, right? Who just keeps beating you. And so you just keep refining and refining until that day you finally beat them and rub it in their face, right? And so that's why I enjoyed Karn Doom, and I think that's one of the things I focus on. If there was something that I need to work on, it would probably be maybe a little similar to Matthew's of maybe getting pegged in certain deck types, because I do like backup plans and kind of having these plans in place. Sometimes I'm less willing to try out decks that I feel may be a little vulnerable early on in particular. Like I see some deck types that people use that they're probably very successful with, and I think, oh, I'd never try that because I would feel so exposed. You know, like I have one of the things in to be more specific is I really like having a solid defensive plan from turn one. And so other decks may rely on instead, they're going to focus on really trying to draw cards really quickly out of the gate to try to get, you know, cards set up, and they're going to take more risk at the beginning. And that's probably something I wouldn't do. So the weakness is maybe, you know, just having this kind of, the set,
the play the style. Or... the O'Brien approach. You got to have backup plans to your backup plans. And...
yeah, yes. Plans plans. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, for myself, I feel like I'm pretty good at gauging the risks involved. I feel like I have a pretty good idea about thinking through and making as correct a decision as possible based on the board state and the cards that may or may not be coming off the encounter deck. And I feel like I'm good at general deck building. Like, I know that if this particular quest is going to hit me with, you know, like Dead Man's Dyke, like, I know that's gonna hit me with a penalty if I have lots of copies of certain things. So I'm gonna, when I build my deck for that, I'm gonna minimize the number of multiple copies I keep in my deck. So those kinds of really broad considerations, I feel like I'm able to put into practice when I'm building decks. What I'm not real good at is thinking in detail. Like, I'm constantly amazed at you guys and the thoughts you put into your decks and the way you analyze and look at the game. And I think that goes back to, first of all, my personality and the shape of my brain. It's not natural for me to sit and think critically about these things. Like, I'm much more of a doer, and I intuit things rather than think critically, which is just something I need to develop in myself. But also because, as I said before, I don't want to take the time. I want to play the freaking game. I want to enjoy the game. And I'm learning, again, through this game and other games and life in general, that you kind of, unfortunately, if you want to improve and you want to really enjoy something, sometimes you just got to sit and think about it and consider it before you go and enjoy. So that's mine. That's a good question, though, and I think that's something I'll think more about, and maybe we can get a little discussion going on the socials this week about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
This has been episode 35 of the Gray Company Podcast. Thanks to all of you who contributed on Twitter and beyond. We appreciate your questions. And thank you, as always, to our patrons. If you like what we do on the show and want to support our contests, hosting fees, equipment — Matthew has a shiny new microphone today — and so on, please head to patreon.com/grayco to sign up. Special thanks to James B., the latest to join our little patron hobbitry in arms. As always, you can find us on various social media outlets, which are linked on our website at graycompanypodcast.com. From there, you can connect with us on all your favorite socials. Please send your emails to thegraycompanypodcast@gmail.com. We would love to read your questions and comments on the air. Until next time, thanks for listening. Good night.
Bye. Good night.